In early August, hiker Brad Bartels sat down his pack, propped up his camera for a selfie, took a picture in front of a monument in Pioneer Park in Fairbanks, and became the first known person to ever complete the Alaska Long Trail Thru-Hike. Brad started his hike in Seward in late June and pieced together a route for the Long Trail, envisioned as a nearly 500-mile long network of trails that is still very much under development. So how did he connect his way from Seward to Fairbanks? And what else did he see and learn along the way? In this episode of Outdoor Explorer, Brad joins me, your host Amy Bouchat, on my back porch in Palmer for a conversation about the trail, his route, and what he learned, saw, and felt on his journey. That's just ahead on Outdoor Explorer. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Amy Bouchat. Today, you're joining me for a conversation with Brad Bartels, the first known thru-hiker of the nearly 500-mile-long Alaska Long Trail. Brad Bartels, welcome to Outdoor Explorer.
Happy to be here.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, so we are sitting on my back porch in Palmer right now, and you have been off the Long Trail for how many days at this time?
Today's day 4 off trail.
Okay, so this is all fresh and new. You're headed back towards Soldotna today, right?
Yep.
And that's where you're going to spend a couple of days or weeks, or what's next?
Yeah, spending a few days there with some family, going to pick up some things in the lower 48, and I'm headed back up here.
Okay, right on. All right. Well, I'm excited to talk to you about the Long Trail today. I know people are very curious about doing this trail, and I love that we're sitting outside here in Palmer, but if folks here, and a not knowing squirrel in the background, that's what's going on. We got my dog in the yard. It's a beautiful Monday morning. So, okay, well, okay. So why don't you just start by telling us where you're from, your hiking story. Just give us like the background.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Soldotna. I did most of my growing up in the lower 48. As far as my hiking story, I was doing some volunteer work in another country during COVID and had to evacuate the country as a result of COVID. And got back to the United States and the world was chaotic and I was confused. So I just ran into the tree line and that's been life ever since.
This is not the first hike, thru-hike that you've done.
Yeah. I try to stay off the big three, but I've done a lot of smaller stuff, like medium-sized trails, things of the nature.
What are some other thru-hikes that you've done?
Florida Trail, Rim Trail, Long Trail, Wind River High Route. Probably forgetting a couple.
Okay.
A lot of lashes.
Where is the Rim Trail and the Long Trail?
Long Trail in Vermont, Rim okay. Trail, the Tahoe Rim Trail.
Okay. I thought maybe you meant a Rim Trail over the Grand Canyon. See, that's how much I know about thru hikes. The Florida Trail is a fairly new thru hike, isn't it?
Yeah. It's surprisingly similar to the Alaska Long Trail as well.
How so?
It's pretty roadwalk heavy, and it counterintuitively highlights some things that makes thru-hiking great.
Like what?
I think the almost lack of wilderness spaces and lack of a really big, cool thru-hike attracts a certain demographic that's willing to do those roadwalks and is kind of just obsessed with the outdoors. So it's less people trying to go out and do this like hard, cool thing to tell their friends about. And it's more just a bunch of people who really, really love the outdoors.
Yeah. That's awesome. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. Because like on the Appalachian Trail or on the Pacific Crest Trail, I imagine you get like a group of folks who are very mixed in that way, or who are maybe doing like more section hiking or bucket lists over a decade, two decades. But it sounds like what you're saying is the other trails, these lesser known thru hikes are more of a quiet lifestyle.
Yeah. Much more quiet.
Yeah. Okay. So you are, I think maybe the first person to thru hike the Long Trail. Is that your impression as well?
I have not heard of anyone else doing it.
Okay.
People have definitely done sections, but yeah, I think I'm the first.
Okay. And that's especially interesting because the Long Trail isn't even really established yet. It's still like very much, not just like a work in progress, but like a concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there are a lot of thru hikes that are still a work in progress, even though they're well established. Is that correct? Is that a correct impression I have?
Absolutely. And I like to highlight the fact that all through hiking trails are constantly a work in progress. Even though when Earl Schaefer, the first thru-hiker, the one who first thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail, when he hiked the Appalachian Trail, it was 20% road walks. And now it's around 2%. And that's driven by a massive entity, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, and a few other entities that fund the Appalachian Trail millions and millions of dollars. And it's still a work in progress.
Yeah. Okay, so you've used the term roadwalk a couple of times. What does that mean? What's a roadwalk?
So there's kind of the highlights, the meat and potatoes of a trail. And best case scenario, to get from this really cool mountain to another cool mountain, there would be a connecting trail in a perfect world.
And that's like on dirt trail.
Yeah, yeah. That's
okay.
But in the imperfect world we live in, those connecting trails don't exist, especially in a conceptual route like this. So you kind of just spit out on a highway and walk the highway, or Forest Service road or small town road, in order to get back to that trail setting.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what percentage of the lower 48 trails are roadwalks? Like, what's a typical roadwalk percentage for a typical thru-hike trail in the lower 48? At least in your experience, yeah.
So you have some that are, the most well-known trails, that, like I said, the Appalachian Trail is down to around 2% roadwalks. But for the more grassroots trail efforts, the smaller trails, something like 30, 40, sometimes even 50% roadwalks.
Okay.
And that's totally acceptable in the thru-hiking community.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is bonkers to me, because it just feels like in Alaska, we expect that is just not a thought, that a portion of a trail would be on pavement or down the road, that we just hear. I think there's an expectation, maybe because it's so wild here in other ways, that trails are trails, right? That, like, we would never think about calling a trail if it included walking on the highway. What I hear you saying is, like, that's the expectation in a lower 48 environment for a thru hike.
Yeah, yeah, not all trails, but a lot of trails have some pretty significant roadwalks, and it's definitely palatable for the thru-hiking community. And the Alaska Long Trail, comparatively to a lot of other trails, isn't that bad roadwalk-wise.
Yeah, even though it's not established yet, and so much of it is like has to include highway
totally,
in some ways.
Totally.
Yeah.
And for those portions of it, I would say the ugliest highway in Alaska is still better than the most beautiful part of New Jersey.
Touche. <Yeah. laughs> Okay, so take us back to like the beginning of how you got to the fact that you are here, that you are from Saldana, but you're raised in Lower 48, and you are the first person that we know of to take on the Long Trail. Like, how does that even happen? Where did you learn about the Long Trail? How did you end up here doing this?
So I learned about the Long Trail years ago, and it just really piqued my curiosity. I'm born here, didn't get to spend much time here. I've never really explored the backcountry here, and this has just been on my thru-hike list before I kind of, step away from the outdoors to make sure I thru-hike the Alaska Long Trail at some point. And, it is this long project. It's called a 40-year project a lot, but I really just... my knees aren't going to work in 40 years. it just felt like the right time to do it.
Yeah. Okay. So when people go to do a thru hike, they do a lot of research first. They're leaning on the experience of other folks thru hikes. They're looking at maps. They're doing Facebook groups. They're, all sorts of research that exists because a thru hike is an established thru hike and an established trail. But that's not the case here. What percentage of the Long Trail is considered complete as of today, that, as far as you know?
It's really tough. I think the Alaska Trails says it's 50% complete over the past couple of years.
I've 15? Seen some 50.
50.
Okay.
And I've seen some resources that say 60 as of recent. I would put it personally, as far as just how it feels, around 70,
okay.
Maybe,
okay.
Optimistically.
And you've done it, so you would know.
Yeah, yeah. I think you could certainly look at a map and be like, oh, there's all these missing portions and connectors. But as far as the overall kind of flow of the thru-hike, it feels great, and it feels like a proper thru-hike.
Yeah, fascinating. So how did you research it?
I called everybody I could find. yeah, I emailed Andrew Skirka. I talked to the National Outdoors
Andrew Skirka is?
Just a very prominent outdoorsman who's done a lot in Alaska. Anyone I could find that wrote an article about the trail or entities that are for or oppose the trail. I just spent a long time talking to people.
Yeah. How long?
Probably around a year of preparation.
Wow. That's intense. And how did the, because the work on the long trail is ongoing. Mm-hmm. How did the trail's completeness or, maintenance or, they're putting in bridges constantly. How did those things evolve over that year of research that you know of? Like, were there sections of the trail that weren't done when you started researching that were done when you went to hike them?
Absolutely, yeah. The trail progress here is intense. They're working a lot on everything. I think it's probably the fastest growing trail effort. Even from just being on the ground, I saw countless trail crews. The Turnagain Arm Extension is a good one that's just constantly or currently being worked on.
Yeah. Okay, so they say the trail is estimated at 500 miles. Like, if this is just a number that's thrown around because there isn't a complete number. How many miles did you do?
I need to process some map data, but yeah, probably, I want to say around 450-ish.
Okay.
Give or take something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely in the ballpark of 500, especially when some things get worked out. There's a few sections that I need to get ironed out and it'll get closer to that 500, but it was definitely a good through hike.
Yeah. You're listening to Alaska Public Media and Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz, and I'm talking to Brad Bartels, who just finished 4 days ago, 5 days ago, a through hike of the Alaskan Long Trail. And we're sitting on my back porch in Palmer, Alaska, which is why you might hear some outdoor noise, including what I think is a trash truck in front of my house beeping its way backwards right now. An angry squirrel, my dog, we don't know. It's a cornucopia of experiences here today. Okay, so people are very curious about your route, and because I've seen Facebook comments asking about this. Yesterday, I was talking to a friend. I said, hey, I'm going to interview this guy. He just did the long trail and he like follows you on Instagram, by the way. He's like, oh, it's that guy. Yeah. Okay. And, I want to know his route. Okay. So while it is difficult to ask you to detail every step of 450 miles, we're not going to do that. But generally speaking, can you lay out your route for us, for folks who are like excited to someday do this themselves?
Yeah, it's tough to wrap up like that. I think a lot of people are really curious about the route. I'm probably going to process some map data and release a GPX file.
Okay.
So for anyone who's either curious or who would like to be an early adopter of this trail. But it's, it's Seward to Fairbanks.
So how about this? I'm going to ask you like specific sections that are sort of known gaps, and maybe you can just describe, generally speaking, how you did it. Yeah. And obviously pull out a map if you need to. I'm not going to expect you to remember how many exact steps of how many days did it take you?
47.
47 days. Okay. We're not going to ask you to remember every moment of 47 days. From Seward to the Turnagain Arm, it is on the historic Iditarod Trail. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is very well established at this point for the most part, because they've been doing a lot of work on it. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Iditarod National Historic Trail is probably one of my favorite parts. Very well maintained, some quality trail. Everything's absolutely stunning. And they got little pictures of dogs, which I appreciate.
Fair enough. Okay. Now that trail ends, if memory serves, right now near Portage. So how do you get from Portage to Girdwood, where you pick up Crow Pass?
Portage. From the Turnagain Arm, it's just a pretty short road walk into Girdwood.
Okay. So you road walked that.
And that's another one of those road walks that don't feel like a road walk. It's a missing gap that kind of spits you out on the highway.
Yeah.
But there's this really cool section of beach And you end up just walking on the beach, reading a little thing about beluga whales. And
Okay.
once the Turnagain Arm extension is complete, it'll make that section, that little connector, even more palatable.
Yeah. So you're up on the beach on the rock, away from the mud flats, though, because we don't want anybody to die there. Okay, just saying. Okay, so then you bop into Girdwood, you go up Crow Pass, over into Eagle River. From the Eagle River Nature Station, you're walking, road walk again, right? Into Eagle River. Did you take the you took the bike path to Eklutna?
There is Eagle River borders Peters Creek, and
Okay.
then you take the Peters Creek Valley Trailhead
Okay.
up to Mount Eklutna,
Okay.
and then you ride the Mount Eklutna ridgeline for a while and just go down in some low country and up over another ridgeline to get into Eklutna campground area.
Okay.
And then you head back up to the
Up to
Shaker
Twin.
Peak, Salt Peak area,
Yep,
the ridgeline that,
Twin Peaks, yep.
and then you kind of follow that ridgeline at a J shape until you're right next to Pioneer Peak, and then you
Yep.
take the Pioneer Peak trailhead out of that section.
Yeah, so the Pepper to Pioneer from Eklutna down to Pioneer Peak Trailhead, and then you're on the Old Glenn Highway where you do the bike path for the most part into Palmer, yes?
You end up taking the Knit River Bridge over
Yep.
into Butte and then end up into Palmer,
Okay. And then you there's a lot of options from there for people who are trying to get north. There's bike paths, there's road, which are road walking basically, right? Because it's paved. There's a variety of ways through Hatcher Pass into Willow. How did you get there?
Yeah, there's definitely, you could take the asphalt into Anchorage, and this is a braided multi-sport trail, so people are rewarded for mixing it up. But from Palmer, I did the long range bomber traverse through the
Okay.
Talkeetnas. So you go in through Escaw Falls and hit a bunch of
Yeah.
huts, then spit out at Hatcher's Pass.
Yeah.
And then some more lovely road walking, which again doesn't really feel like road walking.
Right.
Anywhere in Hatcher's Pass or in that area, this is obscenely beautiful.
Yes.
So,
Agree. Strong agree. Okay, so then you end up in Willow, and where are you headed from there? Because now we're most of the way through Mat-Su, or at least halfway through Mat-Su, and we're going north towards Fairbanks. You're basically out of South Central at this point. How do you get to Fairbanks? This is the part that is like the least identified trails. So I know folks are very curious about this.
Yeah, currently it's again another connector section. You can go into Talkeetna and water taxi across the Chulee. You can walk through the Trapper Creek area, and there's also some ATV trails that are identified in the Trapper Creek area to try to mitigate those road walks. But yeah, for me, I just kind of road walked on up. And there's pretty frequently ATV trails that just kind of skirt the highway, as I'm
Yeah,
sure you've
yeah, yeah.
seen. And those are great for just a safety aspect of not being on the highway. And that's pretty much what it was up until the Curry Ridge area.
Okay, so you took Curry Ridge up from the Kasugi Ken Campground, which is in Denali State Park, and that's a new connection just in the last 2 years from Curry Ridge to Kasugi Ridge. So a lot of folks who are listening to this may not even know that that exists yet. That is brand spanking new. And then you did Curry Ridge. I'm sorry, you did Curry Ridge to Kasugi Ridge. Those two connect above Byer Lake, and then you took Kasugi Ridge down to Coal Creek, where it pops out. Yeah? Yep. Okay, so after Coal Creek, which is where that trail ends, that's a very popular backpacking trail. People are probably very familiar with that. What next?
That's another hefty road walk into Cantwell, which has a
Okay.
quality gas station.
Yes, it does. Anyone who's ever driven to Fairbanks is very familiar with the quality of that gas station, which, by the way, is open year round. Yay.
I got a laundromat there. 10 out
Very
of 10.
nice.
10 out of 10.
Yeah. These are the things you appreciate when you're doing a through hike, especially in Cantwell when you haven't seen a couch to surf on in quite some time.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So after Cantwell is Denali National Park area. So how do you get from Cantwell to up to there? And did you hike in the national park at all?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I think there, I really don't know what the plan is for incorporating the national park, but the Outside of Cantwell, then you start getting into the Denali Park Village area, and there's some really cool hikes there. Yeah, doing Triple Lakes into Mount Healy was a lot of fun.
Okay, very cool. And then if you're someone who's dry, I mean, most of us are driving between Mat-Su and Fairbanks, right? So if you get to that part of the drive, you're like, I'm almost there. But if you're walking, you are not almost there. So what's next?
You can Blue Blaze from Healy to
And that means.
Nanana, and just taking some sort of watercraft. You can rent a
Okay.
kayak, and I really would recommend doing that float. It's a beautiful river. I couldn't work out the logistics at the time, but so it just ended up being another road walk.
Fair enough.
And once you get to Nanana, headed north into Fairbanks, it's some Forest Service roads and then some trail sections into Esther Dome. And then you kind of just walk through Fairbanks to get to the northern terminus, which is Pioneer Park.
Pioneer Park. Okay. So this was just for a couple of days ago for you. So take us to that moment where you are, you're walking to Palmer or to Pioneer Park. What are the feelings? What are the thoughts as you like finish a hike like this?
Definitely different than other thru hikes. There's always a some sort of monument, or a lot of hikes finish on a prominent mountain. But this was just really interesting. You kind of just walk past some kids playing on a playground in this kind of pioneer town themed tourist attraction, and then you're done. It was a combination of surreal and almost anticlimactic.
But one benefit I would, one benefit of being in town like that is you are surrounded by a lot of food.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I took like three pictures and immediately started heading to food.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you're a hungry hiker. We have fed you twice here, and I know
Yeah.
that.
I like to eat. I like to eat.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Yeah.
the one thing I do like about the northern and southern terminus, you can look at it at a map and be like, oh, they're kind of in urban areas. That's a little less fun than finishing on some giant mountain. But at the southern terminus, it's the Iditarod Monument. And it says Trailblazers on it.
Yeah.
And then you get to Pioneer Park. And I think there's a trailblazing pioneer spirit that Alaska has. And that I think that's a really cool thing to work into the trail.
Yeah. Yeah. What parts of the trail, I mean, you did a lot of road walking. Over the last few years, as we've talked about earlier, there's been a lot of work done on the trail to piece some scenes together. The last time I did substantial news reporting on this was several years ago, and like bridges weren't in the Iditarod historic Iditarod section in near Seward. Folks were wading streams, bushwhacking. The one of the guys I interviewed, Max Romy, who folks may have heard on this program before, had attempted to do the long trail route. As it is on that goes across the Hay Flats in Palmer, as opposed to going over the Pioneer Peak Traverse, which you did. And he did in the wintertime on skis and said it was one of the scariest things he's ever done in his life because he was on the highway trying to like just terrible. So anyone who's ever tried to ski on a highway knows that that's like not even a thing. It's just awful. So what parts, now that all that work is in the past, what parts did you see that were like trail, not road walking, that still need some love? Like what did you see out there?
As the trail stands now, I want to say it's over 30%, maybe even closer to 40% road walks, which certainly isn't preferred. There's definitely a lot of fording and bushwhacking, but the vast majority of it was just really beautiful trail. There's some rivers that need to be bypassed, and depending on the seasonal conditions,
Yeah.
but especially on the Iditarod National Historic Trail area, everything was just obscenely perfect. It's super, super congruent for a thru hike.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice that that section of trail down there too bops in and out of entrance points for those of us who don't want a thru hike. Like the South Ingram Trail section is beautiful. And has an entrance right off the Seward Highway, which probably isn't like great for if you're through hiking because now you're on the highway. But if you're me and you want to go for a 12-mile run, it's like perfection.
And I think that close proximity to the highway for a lot of portions facilitates almost like a crawl, walk, run vibe for the trail. I'm born in Alaska, but had zero backcountry experience here up until this hike.
Wow.
So I was kind of, doing it from the perspective of someone who just kind of showed up here because I just showed up here. So I think that was a,
Yeah.
potential valuable perspective to gain for the thru-hiking community. And one of the things that I really enjoyed was, on the Iditarod National Historic Trail, there are some sections that could use a bridge. But there's a series of rivers you get to. One has a bridge, one has like a down tree over it that's kind of sketchy. And then another one is just, I couldn't do. But because of that close proximity to the highway, it was such an easy bypass.
Right. That's amazing. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz, and I'm speaking with Brad Bartels, who just finished hiking the Alaska Long Trail. After this break, we'll continue our conversation.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime, wherever you get your podcasts, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz. I'm chatting with Brad Bartels, a thru hiker who recently finished the Alaska Long Trail. And by recently, I mean within the last several days of this recording. Even though the route isn't even yet officially strung together and open for business, as it were. Okay, so you were just talking about sections of the trail that need work before the break, or, just like little band-aids like bridges. And you mentioned that you had not had any Alaska backcountry experience before coming up here. So I'm wondering, like, how does the backcountry here compare to other through hikes that you've done? Because you've done other hikes that are not super popular, like with a person and Wi-Fi every step of the way. Like the Appalachian Trail is infamous for that. You've done other hikes that don't meet that description. So I'm wondering, like, how does our backcountry experience compare to that? And then I would love to know, like, did you experience any wildlife, any like scary porcupine or bear encounters? Listen, porcupines are scary to some people. Don't make that face, okay? All right, tell us about it.
The backcountry here is intoxicating. John Muir's not writing quotes about New Jersey. I'm not sure why I keep taking jabs at New Jersey, but it's stunning. It's, as far as a setting to have a longer hike in, this, it just doesn't get better than this. The fact it's, more of a conceptual route really doesn't mean much to me. It felt like more of a pure through hike than anything else I've ever done. But yeah, the backcountry here is, it's kinetic. It's different. It's just so much more alive.
Yeah.
As far as the wildlife goes, everyone's wondering about the bears. I saw one bear the entire hike. It was a black bear. Make a lot of bear calls, super scent disciplined at camp. I did everything I could to mitigate that risk or manage that risk. And yeah, saw a bunch of wildlife, mountain goats, porcupine. None of the porcupine made me feel intimidated. They were very polite porcupines.
Okay. My problem with porcupine, in my defense, is that I was very, very surprised by one during a trail run a few months ago. It like was not a threatening situation, but I was so surprised to see a porcupine somewhere I had never seen one before. That I was just like it's now burned into my memory. Anyway, okay.
A marmot gave me some weird vibes
okay,
one
see,
time. Yeah,
this is what I'm saying.
a marmot kind of side-eyed me, thought he was gonna rob me or something. But yeah, the wildlife was surprisingly mild. Everything about it was just lovely.
Yeah, and what about other people? Did you run into any other people on the trail?
Totally. Yeah, like you referenced how popular the Kasugi Ridge hike is.
Yeah.
Tons of people there. Definitely a less social hike than most other hikes, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Yeah, there's some people out there, and Alaska gets outside super hard. If it's a nice day out and you're taking some, mountain bike or ATV trail, oh, people are using that.
Yeah, for sure. Were people, did you discuss the fact that you were doing the thru hike or the long trail with anybody during your hike? And what was your reaction, if so?
Totally. I loved talking about the long trail with everyone I've met. I definitely like picking people's brains and see what the local opinion is. A lot of people thought it was really cool, loved the idea of a long trail. Some people were worried about some of the information that got pushed out in opposition to the long trail and just had a bunch of questions.
So you sort of became the de facto long trail spokesperson.
Yeah, I think being a trail ambassador is a thing in a lot of smaller trails. Most people don't know what a thru hiker looks like. don't really understand the concept of why someone would do it.
Especially here where we don't have a thru hike to do.
Yeah. That's a super foreign concept. So it's really important to me to, you know, just be friendly and respectful and educate people on the benefits of a long trail.
Yeah. Yeah. What part did you see that you want to explore more of?
Oh, that's tough.
I mean,
yeah,
it's a long trail in the title, right? So you got a lot of options, but.
Just everything in every direction. and there's so many potential routes. You can head north through the Talkeetnas more, depending on some things. The trail can get longer and go north of Fairbanks. I'm going to explore that way.
Hmm. That's it's not long enough for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I definitely would love to see it get longer. I would definitely love to see it get longer.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that's kind of the cool part about Alaska. You can just never stop exploring.
Yeah. Yeah, this is why I like haven't really made it out of South Central, right? Because I see no reason to go explore other places when I'm not finished exploring here. Like I just feel like there's just endless trails that I could run, hike, backpack, whatever. And if I spent, you know, like I feel like going to other parts of the state, I'm no longer like chipping away at the thing in my own backyard, which is just like, but I don't know that I'll ever be done. There's just so much.
Yeah. It could. I'm of the same school of thought. I don't know if I'm done either.
But yeah.
I need to be.
Yeah. Well, okay. So in the lower 48, you were telling me in a previous conversation that you do wilderness first aid and you're training in that field. Is that what you're going to come up and do here as well?
Yeah. I spent the past few years as a wilderness EMT doing emergency medical work in a backcountry environment. Now I'd really love to step away from time spent outside. Well, I'm always going to spend time outside, but I would definitely like to pursue a more front country profession in order to have a little bit more stability in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. The seasonal job grind gets old fast.
Yeah. Understood. I think most folks, it seems that most folks' definition of life spent outside and your definition of life spent outside may be different.
How so?
Well, because your life spent outside is every day on a trail, right? Mm-hmm. And for so many of us, like our life spent outside is not literally all of life spent outside, right? It's just integrated into what Alaskans do. And I mean, the show that we're on right now, Outdoor Explorer, right, is predicated on this idea that folks want to understand, you know, and be inspired to go and explore Alaska, even though we're living what you're, you know, what we would call front country lives. You know, I mean, we're sitting on my back porch in Palmer in like a subdivision, right? Talking about your experience and just this shared experience and respect for outside. So I don't know. Seems possible. Yeah.
I really love more of an immersive type of getting outside, even though it's difficult, life's complicated, but there's something about waking up outdoors. It can be somewhere you go and visit, but if you wake up there enough times, it just starts to feel like home.
Yeah.
And you kind of tune into the backcountry and whatever ecosystem you're in and kind of feel a part of the ecosystem. And it's a special feeling that I relish.
Yeah. While I've been playing outside this summer, I have run into several different Alaska Trail organization, which is the organization that's spearheading the Long Trail project. I've run into several of their trail crews doing work. Did you run into Alaska Trail crews during your hike?
Oh yeah. Shout out trail crews. I love my trail crews so much. I very frequently crossing bridges and on well-groomed trail, I just feel so much gratitude for the trail crews and all the hard work and for Alaska Trails and all the other entities that maintain stuff like the Iditarod National Historic Trail and a lot of the backcountry in Alaska. I definitely stop and talk to any trail crews I saw. I don't think it was an Alaska Trails organic trail crew, but on Crow's Pass, there was like this trail crew that was rappelling down on this cliff with like these jackhammer things to take care of rockfall. There's such crazy trail work going on here. And I think there's nowhere else that your trail work is less permanent. You know, how the seasonal ebb and flow here, you can have a trail perfect and in a few years, it's just a bushwhacking nightmare.
Yeah.
So I'm just extra thankful for all the trail work Yeah, love me my trail crew.
Do you think people take trail work for for granted?
Oh, 100%, 100%. And you know, I myself do sometimes as well. It's really easy to see this trail and think like, oh, this trail exists simply because people walk on it.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. I think I've been guilty of that until, you know, probably very recently. I have a trail in our area that I really, really, really like, and the borough has decided to stop maintaining portions of it, most of it, for reasons that have to do with liability and safety and just all sorts of things that are out of their control in many ways. And all of a sudden, you know, I was like, oh, this trail hasn't really been maintained. You know, there's not a lot of maintenance that goes on. This is like past Amy thinking this. And then I'm on the trail this summer and realizing like, oh, hey, like trees are falling in the forest, but people are not there to hear them fall. And yet here they are, right? Like that whole metaphor. Well, they, you know, yes, it did fall because it's still on the trail, right? Mm-hmm. And that somebody in a past iteration of maintenance went out there and cut it down, but nobody's done that now. And that, save for the trail work, that would be the case on every trail.
Totally, totally. Yeah, I encourage people to get out and volunteer with trail efforts. The Alaska Trails is expanding their trail crew work. There's a lot of ambitious trail work going on. But trail work is tough, takes a lot of training and special type of person. And I like trail crews to be well paid. So there needs to be a funding aspect of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the hardest part of any trail project.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's always stuff to spend money on. You just have to pick what it is, right?
Yeah.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz, and I'm speaking with Brad Bartels, who like 15 seconds ago, not really, 4 days ago, came off the Alaska Long Trail after being what we think is the first person to thru-hike it. We're sitting on my back porch in Palmer, chatting outside on a very, very beautiful summer morning. We're really lucky that we're not getting rained on right now, or wind, because in Palmer, it's often windy. okay, so one of the things I wanted to ask you, you know, you said earlier in our conversation that you just spent a year like calling everyone who's ever been quoted or, you know, talked publicly about long trails so that you could get more information about route and all that stuff. There is quite a bit of swirling opposition to the long trail that, you know, from what I've seen in my news reporting on the subject, because I do news reporting here in Mat-Su, and we are one of the pass-through locations for the long trail. So there's lots of discussion here in our local government about it. It's concerned from different user groups who are worried that sections of the trail will be changed so that they can't use them anymore. So specifically, this is folks who are using motorized trails, so snow machine, which is a big part of our culture here in Mat-Su and across Alaska, but especially here. So I'm wondering, like, now that you've walked this trail, like, how do you see that conflict, and do you think there's a concern for it?
I almost want to do it again in the winter via snow machine just to prove a point. but Alaska Trails has come out and said that although the National Scenic Designation could give them, you know, almost the power to restrict motorized usage, they don't plan on doing so. Alaska Trails is very much tracking the fact that snow machine usage is just integral to Alaskan life. And yeah, no one's taken away my right to use a snow machine up here. Yeah, that ain't gonna happen. But yeah, a lot of those concerns aren't necessarily too founded in reality. But hearing the kind of foundation of why those concerns are had from some of the people pushing against the long trail, I can certainly understand why they're doing it and hear them.
Yeah, because they're pointing to history of scenic trail designations in other spots and what has happened there, like lower 48 stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and the history of the Appalachian Pacific Crest Trail incorporates everything from, you know, restricting motorized usage to eminent domain. And you know, a lot of trails wouldn't look the way they do now in the lower 48 without, you know, restricting motorized usage and eminent domain, which is sad, but things like that just don't fly in Alaska.
No, it's really counter, like, we are not about that life.
No, and that's one of my favorite things. I love the fact that we're not about that life. I'm not about that life. yeah, if there's anything that, you know, I don't like and doesn't fly here, it's federal oversight. So I can hear them. I talk to a lot of people in the organizations that are worried about the long trail and hearing those stories about how they just want to be able to take a snow machine where their family's hunted for generations and are worried about that. I think it's important that we respect that. And I would love to see some sort of collaboration with those entities to kind of put those stresses at rest. Because it's not going to happen. No one's restricting any motorized usage. This long trail is already a braided multi-sport trail that even incorporates some snow machine trips.
Yeah. What would it look like for you to do it again in the wintertime?
Don't get me going. No, this has got to be my last extended trip like this.
I don't know. You seem like you're kind of addicted to it. So.
Oh, that's the word. Yeah. No, it's ruined my life, and I need a 12-step program to. I don't know. I think it would almost be more accessible in the winter.
Yeah. Why?
Snow's pretty permissible, especially if you got an engine underneath you. I don't know. I hope I don't find out, but I might.
You alone can keep yourself from doing that. Part of your background includes military service.
Yeah.
You served 4 years in the Marine Corps, told me earlier. I've done quite a number of interviews, several of them on Outdoor Explorer, with veterans who are hiking for veteran reasons. How does your military service inform your desire to be outside and hike? And if so, how?
I think the history of through hiking ties in some veteran-y stuff. Earl Schaefer, the first through hiker, wasn't trying to do this cool thing. He was just trying to hike off the war.
Yeah.
What he called, and he credited for, curing his PTSD from World War II. There's not really any hyper veteran-centric reason I through hike. I think a military background certainly sets you up for success to,
Well, you're used to toting stuff.
Yeah. Used to toting stuff. Used to a certain kind of like just bumming around, sleeping outside. Now there's definitely, I'm not through hiking to raise awareness about, anything other than this trail, I guess. But
But I think it's interesting that like you want to do this trail. And one of the reasons is you're raising awareness, which is of itself is a type of community service. You also do wilderness first aid community service, and serving in the military is community service. So, I mean, I see a through line for you. Maybe that's just like the outside observer thing, but yeah.
I appreciate it. I'll let my parole officer know that I've done a lot of community service. I don't have a parole officer.
Okay, so you and I, like I've said a couple times, are sitting on my back porch in Palmer. You crashed on my couch last night, you're the first Outdoor Explorer guest I've ever had crash on my couch, which I think is wonderful, and I'm definitely going to do that again. You arrived here in my driveway last night, having received a ride from someone you met in Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's two different touch points of rando people that you've met now in this journey. I imagine there are others. So how has your interactions been with folks that you've met along this journey, and how has it changed your hiking experience?
I met so many people. There's almost this serendipity that exists on long trails. You just tend to meet the right people at the right time, and you could say this trail is 30% plus road walks. It's so unfinished, but I think it has just a trail serendipity that's unparalleled. I've met some of the most amazing people. Joe, Mia's dad, amazing human being.
That's people who are listening to this might know Joe from, he runs one of the hiking Facebook pages that's really highly used, Joe Bellavance, right?
Yep, yep.
His name? Okay. And he does his dog Mia, yes. And you and I were talking about the fact that the first time I met Joe, other than seeing him on Facebook, was when I encountered his dog on a trail, and I knew that Joe must be close behind. Because I was like, look, it's a famous dog.
Everybody knows Mia.
Everyone knows Mia. But yeah, so you met Joe as well.
Yeah, I met Joe. And the gentleman Tony, who dropped me off last night, he has a friend, Rob, and Rob's son, Jonathan, was on a climbing trip on his way back home, and I ran into him, and he let me know a few weeks ago if I need a place to crash in Fairbanks to contact him. And yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great though. I love that. And you know, I think Alaskans are also very welcoming, and we've all been in a situation where we rely on someone else. It's just part of our, you know, it's part of Alaska culture. Like, you don't make it here unless you learn how to rely on other people. And so you're, you know, I think we're just open to being relied on because of that.
Yeah, there's this this feeling of like autonomy and self-reliance that you get when you spend so much time outside by yourself. And it kind of takes that whole concept and turns it up on its head, because you really just, you rely on other people. And that was certainly a cool part of the hike. Yeah, cause there were these notes of like, you know, I'm by myself, totally relying on myself. It's everything I brought. But then you're in these situations where you're just relying on other people by proxy of just the Alaska life. And I thought that was a really cool part of this hike. And yeah, I got really close to several people.
Nice. What did you learn about yourself on this hike? I mean, we've got four or five days under your belt to think about that. So, I don't know if that seems like something that people think about for months after a hike. So maybe you don't have a great answer to that right now, and that's okay.
One thing I always say is a rainy day is no match for a sunny disposition.
yeah, it's a good mantra. Yeah.
Thank you. I use it a lot, and it's done me well, and I do believe in it. But one thing I learned is that there's like a week and a half cap to that.
We have had a very rainy year.
One of the things I learned about myself.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about that. Like, okay, week and a half cap. What did you do on, you know, week and a half plus one?
There's a lot of ups and downs to these things, both topographically and emotionally. There's the rain can bring morale down. But a fun side effect of spending so much time outside is just like a really intense gratitude. I'm thankful for the sun. I'm thankful for whatever rain layers I have. So those down moments are certainly intense and felt, but they're so brief.
Yeah, especially in the great scheme of like the preponderance of a long hike, you know? But it's easy to focus on those, right? And it's easy to feel like those are longer than they actually are.
The negatives?
Yeah.
It can feel like that. It can certainly feel like that. And I think, I guess it just depends how outside feels to you. I love playing in the dirt more than words could ever convey. So I pretty quickly snap back to I've been getting rained on for a week and a half. I'm like, what an honor it is to be rained on for a week and a half. Like,
sure. You know, so it's that sunny disposition again.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you're still outside. You're still in some of the most beautiful places on planet Earth. And over the span of human history, pretty sure every human being has been rained on at some point, maybe except from, you know, like the modern human house cat. But it, you know, there's worse things than rain. You know,
yeah. Yeah. I think about just like shorter adventures I've done, you know, and you get out and it's easy to say, oh, that, you know, that wasn't any fun. And because of like something that happened over maybe 15, 20 minutes, as opposed to the longer thing, like it's easy to let that one negative in that longer span color the whole experience.
Totally. And I think getting rained on outside and kind of realizing that, you know, that 15 minutes of rain doesn't need to define that whole experience is like a good exercise.
Yeah.
I think too often we separate experiencing adversity and experiencing fun as if they're mutually exclusive. But those things, especially outside, are, you know, generally the same thing.
Type 2 fun. Which is like something that's fun because it was hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to type 1 fun, objectively fun, and type 3 fun, not actually fun at all.
Yeah.
Just terrible. It's nice to have codes for those things, you know, where you can be like, this, not fun. Type 3. Yeah. It's something that was supposed to be fun, but then turned out to not be fun. Not fun. We're not doing it again. And that could be because, you know, 2 weeks of rain. We don't know. 2 weeks of rain and a 2-week and 1-day adventure. Yeah.
Yeah, mostly type one fun, little type two fun.
Okay. Any type three?
It's
allowed. This was a long trip.
I really have yet to find type three fun outside. Up until the day I get mauled.
Yes, we will definitely put mauling straight into type three fun.
Yeah,
fun.
Not fun.
Had you were outside, had the potential to be fun, then the bear thing, not fun. Yeah. Okay, so people, maybe they're listening to this episode. Maybe they're now super inspired to try to do the long trail like you did. Okay. What do they need to know? What do you want them to know about the long trail? Or maybe they're not interested, but they're advocates or they're naysayers. What do you want people to know?
I really want people to know that you can do this. I know a lot of people in the thru hiking community that have had their eyes on this trail for a really long time. And with it being such a an ambitious project with such foresight of just being like, oh, we want this to be this really big, crazy, braided multi-sport trail that's cooler than anything else. But it is hikeable now. What I want people to know, bring rain pants. I didn't.
Did you get rain pants along the way, or you just did without them the whole time?
So I had a rain jacket and then a system of three emergency ponchos that would be used not only as upper body layers, but as fashioned into rain skirts as well.
How'd that go?
Yeah, it went pretty well. It went well. I never really did the whole rain skirt thing, so I enjoyed looking like a flamboyant wizard. That was fun. But I think I want people to know that this is kind of just another through hike. Like you can do it. It's fun. It's amazing. You meet strangers and get that trail love. You wander into small towns and people are curious about it. It can feel intimidating because it's so new and so different from a lot of other trails. But just take the leap.
Yeah. How should people prepare for it? Other than buying rain pants.
I think a lot of people in the thru-hiking community that do a lot of stuff in the lower 48 are just like, whoa, brown bears. No, thank you. And one thing that made me feel a lot better about it was just learning. A lot about whatever wildlife is in the environment I'm going into.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bear biologist out there, Wes Larson, that produces a lot of content that's kind of outdoor centric. And that stuff's very informative. It's kind of a Alaska's trap. Everyone focuses on the bears and overlooks the environmental conditions and things like the rivers. So, special attention to those primarily.
What about training for this? Because, through hikes are, well, let's put it this way. Alaska's trails are not known for their switchbacks or gentle slopes, right? Yeah. We are a straight up sort of situation. So is this a more challenging trail than other thru hikes might be? And if so, what do people need to know about getting ready for it?
Totally. I love how much challenge exists in this trail. There's kind of this mentality because everything looks relatively similar in the lower 48. Compared to Alaska. But it's kind of just a trail you can hop on in most places.
Yeah,
I definitely did a fair bit of training. Filling a backpack with, a water jug, sandbags, rocks, stuff like that. Didn't reinvent the wheel as far as training goes. It's a heavy backpack and some hiking. Just get used to hiking. Go on some thru hikes. If you're from Alaska and you're experienced with the backcountry, this can totally be your first thru hike.
Would you recommend it as a section hike, or would you do it end to end? Section hiking is when you bop on and off the trail, maybe with days or months in between to piece it together over time, which is not what you did. You did a through hike, which is like end to end the whole thing at one time. Would you recommend it as a section hike?
Absolutely. Especially if someone's looking at these trails and thinks that maybe the road walk's going to take away from some of the backcountry immersion that everyone loves so much. Do Seward to Palmer and then do a lap through the Talkeetnas, and that will guaranteed be the coolest hike you've ever been on.
Yeah. You make it sound very easy. You make it sound very easy. Okay. After we finish this conversation, you're headed south. You're going to Saldatna. Remind us what's next for you.
Oh, I wish I knew. Getting back down to lower 48 and getting some stuff, and then headed back up to Alaska. You kind of set your personal and professional life on fire when you step away from things for months at a time.
Yeah.
So a lot of just kind of reconsolidating all the shattered fragments of my front country life is on the agenda.
Yeah. Well, maybe people will run into you on a Alaska trail, as it were, in the future.
Yeah. Oh, probably.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds cool. Well, Brad, thank you very much for joining me today out here outside in Palmer and talking about your very recent experience on the Long Trail. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for this episode of Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz. A big thanks to my guest, Brad Bartels, for taking time out of his post-hike return trip to share his journey. And from all of your hosts at Outdoor Explorer, we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. Tobin Shelby is its producer, and the program is edited by Ammon Swenson and Crystal Hyde. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed on the show are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can listen to Outdoor Explorer anytime at alaskapublic.org and in your favorite podcast app. If you have a question, comment, or a topic suggestion, email outdoorexplorer@alaskapublic.org.